G-minus 94, Gravesen Hotel, Ankara, Turkey. Back in the same hotel where he had first become aware of a remarkable discovery at one of the many new archaeological dig sites he had been managing around the world, Billy Kendrick sat impatiently waiting for a slow day to finish passing. The Earth's rotation was toying with him, it seemed, with he alone having endured an uneventful and slow-moving afternoon while his friends in Colorado and Buenos Aires had been rising from their beds. When the day's main events were over and he got the all-clear from Dan McCarthy, Billy was set to deliver a late-night news conference from the streets of Ankara. Dan was in on this plan, of course, and would clear it with ICA Chairman William Godfrey during a meeting, which would also involve Mesut Demir, the Turkish archaeologist who Billy had placed in charge of the speculative dig at Dortulu Tepe, which had since rewritten human history with its undeniable proof that non-messenger aliens had engaged with ancient humans using a very familiar-looking cable-based communications interface. Billy and Mesut had been detained by Turkish authorities when word of their find got out, and it took an unrequested intervention from William Godfrey to set them free. Since then, Turkey had formally joined the ICA, and as such, management of the site was transferring to the Argentina-based agency. Neither Billy nor Mesut were the slightest bit concerned about this, given that Dan ultimately called the shots at the ICA and had already seen to it that Mesut would remain in day-to-day charge of the site. Indeed, the Turk was present in Buenos Aires to stand beside William Godfrey and address the media as certain details about the site were revealed to the public for the first time. Certain things wouldn't be revealed just yet, of course, and many others weren't known by either of those men. Having bravely ventured to New Kerguelen at Dan McCarthy's side, Billy himself knew that the tall and long-skulled aliens depicted on an extremely vividly carved pillar at Dortulu Tepe were the same architects who had enslaved the friendly messengers for thousands of years and who viewed humanity as a threat worth guarding against. It didn't take access to secret knowledge to know that humanity's first moves to place nuclear weapons in orbit with the abortive launch of Defensive Station 1 from China a few years earlier had been the event that brought initial contact with the messengers, who were in turn encouraged to act by the machines they previously considered as their elders, but which were in fact merely radio-like devices broadcasting instructions from the unseen and distant architects. An incredible form of technology found within the recently discovered outpost on New Kerguelen had filled Dan and Billy in on all of this context regarding the architect's history of engagement with both humanity and the messengers, and it struck Billy as very likely that Mesut and everyone else would be learning about all of this very soon. Shortly after first learning about the triangular alien patches which granted their wearers the ability to read alien transcripts, the very existence of which weren't yet public knowledge, those patches had enabled Billy and Dan to learn of the messengers' multi-thousand-year subjugation at the hands of the technologically superior but morally bankrupt architects. Like all other alien technology that had come to light in recent years, the transcripts were architect technology rather than messenger technology. And like Dan, Billy tried to retain the positive perspective that it was better to know the truth and see harsh reality in the light of day than it was to live a life scrambling around in the darkness of deceit, however comfortable that may have been in relative terms, as the messengers had been for so long. The main positive for Billy, though, had been what else the duo saw in New Kerguelen, namely the abandoned city they had christened New Birchwood. The messengers were likely to repopulate this city just as soon as their societal leaders, including the particularly amiable Leisha, found the most tactful way to share the upsetting and potentially destabilizing truth that their whole species had been misled into needlessly huddling within an enclosed structure that covered only a tiny fraction of their perfectly habitable planet. Thoughts of New Birchwood kept Billy Kendrick awake at night for all the right reasons, with his mind endlessly running through the potential discoveries that lay in wait. All of his questions about the messengers and their culture, most of which had been lost to time ever since the architects began directing the species' development down a selfishly designated path, could well be answered. In decades gone by, Billy had been elated by the discovery of all but destroyed settlements from civilizations ranging from the Vikings to various Mesoamerican peoples. In many cases, a few fragments of pottery had been used to draw conclusions that earned him countless references and much professional respect, so his heart was understandably aflutter at the prospect of wandering through a perfectly preserved alien city. Billy was well-liked and well-trusted by Leisha, which bode well for his chances of being selected for any future trip to New Kerguelen, as he had been for the last one. But Dan had made it abundantly clear that the only course of immediate action was to let the messengers deal with their own issues in their own time. The time to explore the wonders of New Birchwood would come, extremely soon, Dan predicted, and attempting to hasten this by badgering Leisha would likely be counterproductive. Billy shifted in his seat as the TV news circled back through repetitive stories he knew by the word after too many hours in the chair. Slightly constricted in his smartest trousers, which he rarely wore anymore and which were today feeling a little on the small side for a waist that wasn't quite as trim as it used to be, Billy considered changing, but opted to push this mild discomfort aside in case word came in from Buenos Aires that Dan wanted him to move his news conference forward. This public appearance hadn't even been announced yet, but the central location of the swanky Gravison Hotel and the power of Billy's social media reach ensured that a crowd would gather at very short notice wherever and whenever he said he would be. He hoped an early call would come from Dan, but he certainly wasn't expecting it. With a sudden and largely baseless urge to check that his phone wasn't on silent, Billy instinctively reached his hand into his right side pocket. Oh yeah, he sighed, remembering a second later that his new and frustratingly large phone didn't comfortably fit in the trousers' tight pockets any better than his newly and frustratingly large stomach fitted in their waistband. The past 3 weeks had seen no marked decrease in physical activity. Billy was never the most active of men, and his short-term weight gain was instead down to an increase in caloric intake he could justifiably blame on the massive stress of keeping quiet about what he'd seen on New Kerguelen. Having once quietly and reluctantly found himself judging Dan for keeping Richard Walker's hoax quiet when he first became aware of it, Billy now knew only too well what it felt like to live with explosive knowledge that was best kept from the world at large until it could be safely and responsibly revealed. He had always admired Dan and his close family members for staying strong during the trials of recent years, but Billy had a newfound admiration for the dignified manner in which they'd conducted themselves. He felt that he was doing a good job now, too, and regular calls with Dan made things easier. After today, he hoped, things would get easier. William Godfrey and the rest of the world would learn however much Dan and, more importantly, Emma deemed appropriate for now. And however much that was, Billy knew that some of the load would be gone by the next time he fell asleep. In the tight pocket where he had fruitlessly reached for his phone, Billy's hand felt the odd shape of a thin object. Curious, he lifted it out. A smile crossed his face as the last thing he expected to see met his eyes. The triangular patch he had received on New Kerguelen, which granted the wearer the uplift ability to interpret the architect's information-rich and otherwise invisible transcripts. The clearest way these transcripts had been described or explained to date was by way of comparison to QR codes, which were at least passably familiar to almost everyone. These two-tone barcode-like squares meant nothing to human eyes, but pointing a phone's camera at one would bring forth information that did make sense. Whether this was an image, text, or even video depended on the online location to which the QR code pointed the device, which acted as an intermediary, and in some respects, this metaphor was a very good one. Aside from the absence of a physical screen between their eyes and the coded message, the chief difference was that neither Billy nor Dan had visually seen the transcripts that the patches enabled their temporarily uplifted minds to interpret. The information that had flooded their minds via the transcripts truly did so in the form of a deluge, overwhelming their brains to the extent that Billy had been unable to keep looking for more than a few seconds on his first attempt. It was as though they had been directly hooked up to a well of knowledge that tried to upload more information than they could handle at one time, with competing visual images lighting up every area of their brains at once. Timo Fiori, who had been present in Birchwood when the duo returned from New Kerguelen and hence knew as much as they did, had offered to provide whatever kind of neurological equipment the men wanted to hook themselves up to while trying their best to recall their experience. Timo was no expert on this subject, one whose delicacy meant that he couldn't exactly put out an open call for advice, and Dan and Billy both explained to him that merely recalling their remarkable experiences with the transcripts had nothing like the same mental affects as actually looking at one. Billy held the triangular patch in his hand and smiled, not so much at the memories of using it than at how fortunate he had been to rediscover it like this. This was one secret Dan wouldn't have to know, since the news that Billy had carefully left such a priceless object in a pair of trousers he would probably have thrown out the next day was hardly likely to be well received. No harm, no foul, Billy considered, thanking his lucky stars that he hadn't put the trousers in for dry cleaning since the last time he'd worn them on that fateful night. He was only wearing them today, indeed, because they were the only reasonably smart pair he had, and as such represented the obvious choice for standing in front of TV cameras later in the Turkish night. The patch wouldn't be going back in their pocket, needless to say, and would instead be placed inside Billy's passport within the room's high security safe. Holding the patch in his hand brought a strong and, in Billy's mind, harmless temptation to feel the cool sensation of its unusual texture against his skin, so he allowed himself a quick shot before putting it safely out of sight. What's the worst that can happen? He thought to himself, equally absent of any notion as to the best that could happen. In reality, the best and worst were one and the same. For as unsettling as what Billy Kendrick was about to discover might be, it was always better to know.